This week's conversation with Tisha McEwen of Tisha Embroidery is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. We encourage you to join EGA either through a local chapter or as a member at large. You'll find that no matter what stitching technique you favor, the EGA has plenty of offerings that will enhance your enjoyment. One of the more exciting EGA offerings is the virtual lecture series. The next lecture is Linen, the Journey from Seed to Cloth, presented by Ellen Phelps. Members can register now through August 11, and the online presentation is August 13 at 1 p.m. Eastern. One of the great things about virtual lectures is that they are recorded, so when life gets in the way, you don't miss out. Also, be sure to check out the long list of free projects offered on the website. Select one and stitch it with your guild friends. Visit EGA USA today and join to experience all the benefits. And now, on to our conversation with Tisha McEwen. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist from Adelaide, Australia, Tisha McEwen. Tisha, welcome.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's so nice to talk to you.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Glad to have you. So, all right, we got to get back. We were starting to tell the story here before we recorded, so we had to stop. So you're at your daughter's, and when she had your grandson, what was the story now?
I was looking at the lampshade that I embroidered for her, and when she was pregnant, I said, "What would you like me to embroider for your baby?" And she said, "Well, how about a woodland lampshade with creatures on it?" And she looked at me and she said, "Mum, no fairies." And I said, "Well, okay, no fairies. That's okay. No worries." So I didn't put any fairies on it, but I did put a fairy door in the tree just in case.
So you can go back and add in later then.
Well, that's right. I also thought if there happened to be fairies lurking around, they've got somewhere to go.
So that's right. That's right.
I grew up with lots of books, and I grew up with Beatrix Potter and Mae Gibbs, and I'm not sure if you've heard of an artist. She's an Australian from the 20s and 30s called Ida Rentoul Outhwaite, and I used to spend hours and hours reading her books and looking at pictures. And one of my girls said to me once, she said, "You grew up with lots of books, didn't you? And I said, "Yes." And she said, "I can see it in your work, you know, the imagination." And I had two sisters. There were three of us. And we used to, go outside and make dolls out of sticks and leaves, and use grass and flowers for their hair. And it was a very imaginative childhood. I think I always was looking for some way to express that some way in my own life, you know.
So where does the fairy interest come in? We should tell people that we're talking to you because you do absolutely gorgeous surface embroidery of all kinds, and you have a project in the latest Inspirations magazine, number 119. And one of the really cool things you do is embroidery on lampshades. But all your woodland animals and things are just so beautiful. So where do the fairies come from? Is that part of that childhood imagination period?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And I've always had a fascination with, you know, whether fairies really do exist. And, you know, the Beatrix Potter with the creatures that talk. And it's always just been what I grew up with. And, yeah, I think that's it. And also a love of nature, because my mother was a big nature lover, and she had all these books on her shelf, you know, and with insects and so on. And my sisters and I used to get especially we loved the spider one, and we'd bring the spider book down and we'd turn the pages, and if our fingers touched an actual photograph of the spider as we turned the pages, we'd all scream, but we'd go back for more. And I just grew up with this fascination, yeah, of creatures. And we used to keep slaters as pets. I think you call them woodlice, but here in Adelaide, we call them slaters, and we'd set up little gardens. And we especially loved caterpillar season in the spring because they'd eat the blossoms, you know, and you'd give the caterpillar a petal, a pink petal, and they just munch it right before your eyes. It just fascinated me. And when I grew up, I had a citrus tree in my backyard, and I noticed that the citrus butterfly, that their larvae were eating the leaves. And then so I was watching them, and then I realized that wasps, native wasps, were taking the larvae, the caterpillars, back to their nests to feed to their babies. So that was devastating to me. So my partner got me a tent cover, not the actual tent, just the fly, I think it's called. And we put the, it was in a pot, we put the tree in the inside the tent so that we could protect it. And I'd have people come and say to me, oh, you're protecting the tree from the grubs, are you? And I'd go, no, I'm protecting the grubs. And the butterflies would hatch and we'd watch them fly off. And that's when I got into my butterfly girl phase, which I don't know if you've seen any of my butterfly girls. I yes. learned to do work, and I would make the wings, do the wings exactly as actual butterflies, and then I'd stitch them onto girl figures. So yeah, that's where my love of nature comes from too, and I think yes, you can see that in my work. Yeah.
Yeah. Where does the embroidery come in? Was that something you learned from your mother, grandmother? How does that come in, and then you connect it to nature?
Well, my mother was always quite crafty, and she would pick up different hobbies. And one of them was embroidery when I was about 12. And we girls would trail along behind her and do whatever she was doing, whether it was stamp collecting or making potpourri or rose petal, excuse me, creations. And yeah, she picked up embroidery. But really, my love of embroidery started back then. But then my mother-in-law, when I had my first daughter, who's now the one with my grandson, she would make these gorgeous dresses with smocking. And I loved the smocking, and I do still love smocking. And she would put grub roses on them. And I said to my mother-in-law, oh, please, will you teach me how to make those? And then I got into cross-stitch. So for me, the world of embroidery looked like cross-stitch, grub roses and smocking. And I knew that I wasn't a smocker because I'm not really into straight lines. I'll tell you a funny thing. I was listening to your podcast with Jen Weber from a few weeks ago. Uh-huh. And so interesting, you know, that for her, the tamari balls with their geometric shapes just drew her in, and she was inspired by those. And I thought we're all so different, you know, because it's the exact opposite for me, you know, those geometric shapes, whilst I appreciate their beauty, just don't enthrall me. But we're all so different, aren't we? You know, it's it was interesting listening to her talking about that. But for me, the world of embroidery was initially cross-stitch, and I always picked the really big designs, you know, like I had to do, you know, projects that embroidery designs that were, you know, miles long. And I was always changing them, you know, putting an extra flower in here or there. And then I was driving down Kensington Road here in Adelaide, and the Country Bumpkin shop, I would pass it twice a day. And I thought, they always had smocking in the window, you know.
Wait a minute.
I must go in there one day.
Wait a minute. You got to pass the Country Bumpkin twice a day? How did you not go bankrupt? you should.
I know. This is the thing, you know. I'm so lucky that I grew up in Adelaide, because Adelaide is, or South Australia, is the birthplace of the Inspirations magazine and of Country Bumpkin as well. And we're so lucky, we have so many wonderful designers here in Adelaide, even just alone, you know. Right. But I never went in, Gary, you know. I'd drive down the road and I'd see the smocking and I'd go, well, I love smocking, but it's not for me. And then one day I thought, right, okay, I have to go in. I go in. So I go in the door, I open up, I walk inside, and oh my, the world just turned into an Aladdin's cave. And I was off. I was away. I was stitching and stitching and stitching, you know. And I would stay up till 3 a.m. Doing embroidery. It just has, ever since then, has just been my absolute undying passion.
So did you take classes there, or, you know, just sort of jumped in at the country?
Well, the Inspirations magazines are so well laid out, you know. So I found designs that I really loved, and I would get the supplies or buy the kits and take them home, and mostly self-taught. And then if there was a technique that I was struggling with, you know, Country Bumpkin had classes, and I did some classes on padded satin with Susan O'Connor and Anna Scott and Jenny McWinnie, of course, went from there. And then started designing, because, as I said, I had to change everything. So, you know, I'd see a flower in my garden and want to embroider that, or put embellishments on clothes. And that was where my very first piece got published. I found this gorgeous soft green cardigan, and I thought, that cardigan needs some flowers. So I put them around the edge and around the cuffs, and offered it to Inspirations magazine, and that was the very first thing I had published. And it's so exciting to get published that that motivated me then, and I went on to do original work from there.
Okay, all right. So we have a true embroiderer, because you can't do straight lines, and yep. a true designer, because no matter what it is, you got to change it to your own colors and your own. Your own vision. So, all right, you got all the tools right there.
Well, that's right. And plus, you know, I've always loved drawing. And even though I don't consider myself to be a really good drawer, I've always loved drawing and creating designs. And I love swirls, you know, when you draw a swirl and then when you stitch it, you know, it's got to have the perfect flow. It doesn't have to be symmetrical, but it's got to have the right temperament, you know. So yeah, that's part of my designs as well.
Is there an art background, formal art training, or is this just kind of a natural ability?
Not really. It's really just, you know, just keeping on at something, even if you're not very good at it, you know. When I'm drawing animals, I'll, you know, I could spend an hour getting the foot right, you know. Hands and faces are the hardest. And, you know, I think that's why my butterfly girls were such a thing for me, because, you know, it was enforced perfection, and I would... But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you draw a face and then you stitch it, and always each butterfly girl would come out, you know, like when you have a baby, you know, you just never quite know what they're going to look like until they're there. And right. It was a bit the same with my designs, you know, and they change as I'm stitching them and so on, but no formal training. But there's a type of embroidery that fell into because my daughter was getting married, and we wanted to do embroidery on her veil. So we got her veil, and we just started embroidering, the two of us. I must admit, I did most of it. She mostly made the cups of tea, but we embroidered on her veil. Yeah. Oh, what? She goes out. I went out, came back in. And she's got this look on her face, and I'm there, what's the matter? What's happened? She goes, Mum, I've snipped a hole in the veil.
That's not good.
So, oh, no, it was not good, because there was no going and getting another veil. So we looked at it, and I said, right, you're on tea, cup of tea duty. I'll do the stitching. So somehow I managed to repair it. And did embroidery on tulle, but that's an area that I'd like to explore more, because it actually turned out very pretty. And we put some bluebirds on her veil, which was the something blue part of getting married. But I stumbled upon two back issues of Inspirations, which have embroidery on tulle, but of course they call it net darning. Never had occurred to me.
All right, now you're gonna have to back up, because I have a friend who her niece wants her to stitch on a veil? And that's what we've been kind of going around in circles. What are you going to use for the base? Should she start with something that's very lacy, or should she start with a blank slate of tulle? So did you start with a blank slate of tulle?
We did, and it was the blind leading the blind, because I didn't think to check back issues of Inspirations until well after we'd finished it. But we started with blank tulle, and we drew out the designs, and then I just sort of copied them by eye onto the tulle. But if you were to start with lace, you would immediately have a base to stitch from. So definitely you could embellish further if you because the hard part is the knots and securing your thread. So mm-hmm. you secure your thread by stitching back through it, and the other hard part about embroidering on tulle is that you can see both sides, so which in a way is kind of good, because the design is double-sided. But now I'm no expert on this. This was purely trial and error, and it was only just the other day that I stumbled upon the back issues. I'll tell you which ones they are, so if any of your listeners would like to go and have a look. It's Inspirations number 20 and Inspirations 102. So, Beth, you could share those with your niece and have a look at how they do it, how they get started. But once again, even if I'd had the books, I probably wouldn't have followed the rules, you know. We just kind of stitch, and it's sort of almost like a running stitch that you do, weaving in and out of the squares on the net or the tulle. So, that's a great way to get started. Is to have a look at those back issues, or just pick it up and thread your needle and get going.
It's a friend who said that's what she's thinking about doing. She's like, well, do I just start on tulle, or should I? And we're like, we don't know, but that'll give her something to look at. She'll have something at least to give her something to jump around and start. But that's interesting that you did do your daughter's veil. And you just jumped in.
Yes, it turned out beautifully. Yeah, it's really just securing the thread is the most important part. And you just do that by taking a straight stitch and then stitching into the back of it, of that thread. So, you could always just do a little granitos or something that you stitch over, and then that will give the starting stitch extra security. Make it up as you go along, I say.
Right.
All right, here comes the dumb guy question. How is what you're doing different from using a tambour hook? Is that completely different technique?
Well, yes, and I have never done tambour work, and I've never done tambour hooking. But once again, we are in Adelaide, and there is a very famous tambour embroiderer, Crystal Gale. I always get her mixed up with the singer. I think it's Crystal Gale, and she does beautiful work. So I might even pop along to see her, seeing as she's lives in the same town as me. But I think they are different. And as I said, I just picked up a needle and thread and thought I'll just do what I know, which is to make little stitches and turn them into flowers and so on.
Okay, I got to learn more about that now, because, I mean, tambour is done on a tulle-like fabric, right? I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
As far as I know.
Now I got it.
That's an area that I'm going to. Well, I might do the same, Gary. And maybe you should have a podcast on tambour.
Yeah, well, we've talked to some tambour artists, and that's amazing stuff in its own right. So, yes, the fashion world.
Oh, the world of embroidery is so big. Yeah. Oh, yes, and the couture for sure. Mm.
Yeah. So designing your own pieces just kind of evolved out of the fact that you just have a mind that just sees things and puts them on ground cloth.
Oh, you're so right, Gary. That is exactly it, you know. I see a dress and I think, well, I love that dress, but it's missing flowers or, like lampshades. That's another whole thing that I love the idea of a scene changing and not repeating. And so lampshade to me, you know, you could go in and just turn it a little bit each night and there's something different to see. And that's where I started getting into embroidery on lampshades, you know. The first lampshade that I designed was Frog Went Walking. I don't know if you know that song, Frog Went Walking on a Summer's Day. And I thought, I could embroider that and put it on a lampshade and then you could just have a different verse at the front each time, you know, each night. And I stitched that whole song, which, you know, interestingly, spoke to a woman from, where was she from? One of the Scandinavian countries. And she said, do you know, we have that song in my language too. I didn't know that. It's almost like a universal song. Do you know the one? I'll sing it for you if you like. But my expertise,
yeah, sing it. I don't know that one. Do you know that one, Beth?
I think I do. I think we learned it as kids, but I wouldn't sing it. But
a frog went walking on a summer's day. Hum, hum. That's the one.
No. Don't know that.
Yeah,
one.
I just. Nope. Yeah. We used to sing it as kids.
Well, Frog Marries a Mouse. Frog Marries a Mouse on a summer's day. And I was always fascinated by the fact that they had fried mosquitoes with bread and butter at the wedding reception. Fried mosquitoes and bread and butter. So I embedded them with a little sandwich. But I didn't put the mosquito inside. I thought I'll leave that to people's imagination. So that was one of my favorite, one of my most favorite designs is my frog walking. But I've actually, fairies haven't featured a lot in my embroidery, unless you call my butterfly girls fairies, which in a way I guess they are. But the piece that I have designed, which I designed for the needlework convention in London, has got actual little fairies on it. And one is sitting on a swing and another one is pushing a cart and another one is feeding their pet, which, of course, as you probably know, is a dragon, another fantasy creature.
Yeah, all right, let's go back to the lampshades because, see, Beth saw your work because I sent her all your photos and now she's already figured out that she needs to buy a lamp and then because she wants to do a shade. So that does not look easy to do. Was that a lot of trial and error?
Well, if I can just give you some, a hint, Beth, and that's to begin with a straight-sided lampshade like a drum, and that's the easiest way to do it is to choose a lampshade that's already got fabric on it. Choose plain fabric and then measure it up and I'll just have a sip of my tea somewhere. Measure it up and then make your design fit that shade and don't take the background fabric off your shade, and that's how you get started. It's okay, not so, that hard.
So I don't need to go and get separate fabric, get the wire. I can just stitch right on a lampshade as long as it's a fabric. It doesn't matter.
Yes,
what
so
it
you'll
is.
Do the embroidery. Exactly. Of course, you don't want to pick a shade that's got flowers already over it. Pick a plain shade. And then your design, you'll stitch on separate fabric. And then you'll attach it to the shade that's already got the plain fabric on it. So that acts as a cover for the back of your work. Excellent. As a base.
Yes,
perfect. Yeah, and you can even buy lampshade kits that you make up yourself, or just go to the hardware store and choose yourself a plain shade and make your embroidery design to fit that. It's really not that hard.
I guess it looks difficult and I don't know why I think it looks difficult. Maybe it's the attaching to the lampshade, but you're just saying it's just like a drum. You're just making a drum with no top and bottom.
That's right. And I mean, you've got to have the embroidery straight and you need it to stay inside your shape. But, you know, that's pretty easy. You just draw up the rectangle, you know, which is made up from the, here we go, getting into mathematics, the diameter, which is then becomes the circumference and the height of your drum. So you need to check those and then draw them out onto your paper and then make your design fit that shape. And you, when you're stitching the embroidered fabric onto the drum, you need it to be tight and even. So I do a few, I'll do a couple of inches up the top. Then I, this is after the embroidery is completed. Then I stitch a couple of inches down the bottom and then you just go back and forth, checking that your embroidery is straight and tight on your drum. You really are just stitching it to a frame, but which happens to be circular.
And it doesn't matter. You're like, I'm looking at your fairy's pet and the dragon is looks very dimensional, but that doesn't make any difference on the lampshade that it's.
Oh, no. So see, texture for me, embroidery is all about texture. And I very rarely put my embroideries under glass because for me, the threads and the texture of the threads is what makes them come alive. You know, like the texture. There's stump work on my fairy's pet, on my dragon. He has a stump work wing because I love it. Makes them more real when they, you know, when they're off the fabric, doesn't it? And the same with the fairies. The fairies are a form of stump work. Probably not a true word for them, but. They do attach to the background. Yep, you can definitely have texture on a lampshade. You could cover it in stump work if you wanted. Just have to be careful when you're turning the scene that you don't bump them.
right. and that they don't get too dusty either. That would be my other problem in my house with my silly cat.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that people say to me, doesn't your work get dusty? And I go, well, no, it doesn't really. And, you know, I've got embroidered pieces that are framed with no glass hanging up. And if they do get dusty, well, you just blow the dust off. Right. So, yeah, I've never really had that problem with dust. And if a spider builds a web, well, that means he loves your work too.
Okay. All right, so what, as you've evolved here, now, do you have a formal business where you sell your stitched pieces, you sell designs? What is your business like? Is it teaching? What's at the core?
Well, I do teach, and I teach here in Adelaide at Creating Stitch on Fridays, and my girls, I call them my girls, and I have three friends who come in, they're my triplets, and I teach every Friday, which I love because it's sharing my passion. And to have a job where you can share your passion is everybody's ultimate dream, I think, you know. Just digressing a little bit, I did an arts degree a long time ago and I had a tutor who was talking to us about what we were all going to do, and an arts degree is not vocational. And he said, you know, it really doesn't matter what you do. If it comes from your heart, people will want what you have. And I have an Etsy shop and sell my designs through my Etsy shop, and I don't sell originals very often. I used to, and then the owner of Create and Stitch said to me, she said, Tisha, she said, you never sell your originals. You need them. And it's so true because it's so nice to have the original there to look at, you know, for my girls when they're doing some of my designs. But being published, Gary and Beth, is just such a wonderful feeling. It's a real driver. I love seeing my work in the magazines and inspirations there. Photography is just so... Oh, it's just so beautiful. It manages to capture, things never look quite as beautiful in print, unless they're in Inspirations magazine.
yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, so yep. Designing and sharing my designs is a big motivator for me. And I do teach, yes.
Yeah. How many
did that answer your question?
Yeah. How many designs have you done for Inspirations?
Well, they've published 8 of my designs, and I've got another one in the pipeline, and another one I'm about to start. But I did get published in another magazine, which is no longer exists because print media has gone by the wayside mostly. But after my little green cardigan got published, I sent a girlfriend of mine out. I went from little to enormous. I sent my girlfriend out. I said, "You've got to find me a parasol. I need a parasol. It's got to have a beautiful handle. The spokes need to be in perfect condition, and it still needs the cover intact because I need that for a pattern." So off she went, and she came back with this most beautiful parasol with this lovely handle made of cane and some other material. It was beautiful, and sure enough, the cover was intact and none of the spokes were bent. So I took the cover off and used that as a pattern. And I, I don't think I sent you a photo of my parasol. I'll have to dig it out.
Yeah.
I sat up. That was one of my 3 a.m. every night forays where I stitched these pink roses and honeysuckle onto. And that was repetitive. I don't do a lot of repetitive embroidery, but I embroidered all the way around the sides on the edge. And then I made a ruffle. And and that was another one where I had to change everything. I just knew I wanted it in this green. I have this fascination with green and pink, and I had to dye the fabric because I couldn't find exactly the shade of green that I wanted, and I wanted the inside of it to be very, very, very pale pink. So I had to dye that as well because I couldn't find the exact shade of pink I wanted. Always making life harder for myself, but then I made a ruffle and I put it on. Nobody's ever used the parasol, might I add, but I'm very proud of my lovely parasol. And that was this does link into what we were talking about, because then I offered my parasol to, and of course I called it Shady Lady, which, and this is true, was the name of the roses that I embroidered. They were Shady Lady roses. So of course they were the ones that had to go on my parasol. But that got published by a magazine based in Sydney, and I used to give them all of my work. In fact, they were a huge driver for me to embroider. And when they closed, I cried.
So do you I mean, 8 times in Inspirations, that's impressive in its own right. When you come up with ideas, do you identify every now and then, all right, this one is one I'm going to submit to Inspirations? Or have among those 8, have they come to you and said, will you do something in this area or on this topic?
Yes, good question. Well, I solely embroider what I love, and I just have ideas popping out of my head all the time of things I want to embroider. So whilst being published is a wonderful motivation, I really just embroider what I want and what I love, and what idea is just won't go away until it gets embroidered. And so I will do the embroidery. I come up with the idea, and then I'll draw it out, and then I'll embroider it. And by the way, if I'm in the middle of embroidering something and I'm not enjoying it, I do not feel guilty at all in putting it aside. And I know a lot of people, feel bad that they didn't finish it. And I, 100% of the time I say, if you're not enjoying it, don't embroider it, because it should be done with love. And if you're not loving it, then it's not right. And so I'll put it aside, and sometimes I'll come back to them, and sometimes I won't, and that's perfectly okay. Sometimes I'll put something aside, and then I'll go and dig it out again, 5 years later, and I'll go, what was wrong with that? That's beautiful. And the same with unpicking. I won't unpick. I just leave something and go away and sleep on it. And even if I sleep on it for 5 years, I'll come back, and then I can decide if I want to pick it up again or leave it or change it. But then when I've finished the embroidery, and I try to make practical items as well, things that people can use. Tends to be lampshades for me. But then if I feel it's really has turned out exceptionally well, then I'll send photos of it to the magazine, and they will let me know if they like it enough to publish it. But having said that, I did get asked to do a piece for them just recently, which has been a big honour. But once again, you know, if I don't feel I can do it justice, you know, that's okay. I'll do something else. But I really embroider what I enjoy, and if it turns out well, then I'll offer it to them. Mm.
Now, do you always sign your pieces?
Well, this is yes. Whenever. All my life, I've had to spell my name for people and tell them how it's pronounced. But, I always wished I had a different name. My middle name's Louise, so I used to, and I always loved the name Emily. So, I always wished my mum had called me Emily. And then I grew up and started doing embroidery. And I love the fact that I can sign my name Tisha. And whilst there are a few Tishas around the world, I don't think there's any embroiderers called Tisha, although I'm very happy for you to contact me if you are an embroiderer and your name happens to be Tisha. But yeah, I love to sign my work with just my name because it's so unusual.
Well, and I have my my inspirations in front of me, and I was looking at your Summerberry design, and I was like, okay, what is, you know, one of the images is like, okay, what is this that I'm looking at? And then I realized it's your name. You put it right into the design. And I thought that was so interesting.
Well, when I first started signing my full name on my work, I would do it in a matching background thread because I love the idea of someone looking at a design and seeing things that they'd never seen before. And I liked the idea that, you could sign your name and no one would know it was yours unless they were looking so closely that they saw it there. And so I always encourage my girls to sign their name, and so I would hide it in the work. But yes, I did my name on Summerberry in the metallic braid that I used. Once again, it's hidden in there. But I love the idea, you know, when someone's looking at one of my designs, that there'll be a little creature that they hadn't seen before, you know, like an ant sitting at a table eating cupcakes or whatever. You know, it's just the little fantasy elements and the hidden elements in it. It's always had big appeal for me.
I had to grab my magazine and find it. It's on, anybody who has Inspirations 119, it's on page 80. But I found your name in there. Very, very, yeah, that's good. Well done. Yep.
Well, it only appears once, and they just happened to put the close-up, it has my name. But, yes, the full picture, right. Which, you know, as I said, the way they do their photography, it really brings out. But I don't know if you noticed the leaves there, Gary. You were asking me if they were gold work, and they are made from metallic mesh ribbon. And I saw this ribbon because I love texture, as I've said, and, you know, I'm always looking for threads and ribbons and materials to stitch with that have got texture. And as soon as I saw the metallic mesh ribbon, I just thought, they are leaves. Because, you know, sometimes in the autumn you find those leaves, I think it's called they're skeletonized, where yes. Some sweet little creature has eaten them and left just the veins. And so when you stretch open the metallic mesh ribbon, it has this look like it's been skeletonized by some darling little creature. And so as soon as I saw the metallic mesh, I knew what had to be done with it. So you stretch it out and couch it down with invisible thread and give it texture by bending the mesh so that it sits up. I just love my embroidery to pop off the page, you know, like the pictures in beautiful books.
Yeah, I love that Summerberry, is that right? Yeah, Summerberry.
Yes.
Because to look at most of your work, the impression you get is that you just you do pretty much basic surface embroidery, though very well and very creatively. And then this Summerberry, it has to me, a surface embroidery and a gold work feel to it and a stump work feel to it. And yet it's so delicate. You know, every bit of it is just so, so delicate. Even the heavy vines, it's just really special. I mean, there's even some beads in there, and it's just a real collection of different things that all work together to make just a beautiful little wreath.
Yes, well, I think it did achieve what I had hoped. A lot of my work is very pretty, inverted commas, and I can't help that. That's how I was born, and it's popped out in my embroidery. But I try all different types of embroidery, and stump work has particularly fascinated me because of, you know, it's got that three-dimensional element. Mm.
Yeah, well, it really comes out in Summerberry. That's a beautiful piece.
Thank you.
So is that you doing more of that kind of needlework, or is that just kind of a one-off thing?
That particular design just came into my head and was chattering very loudly, so I had to embroider those and use my metallic mesh ribbon and the lovely warm golds and so on. And I've recently fallen in love with GIMP, which is like wrapped wire. So there's GIMP I use on my fairy's pet as well, which I'm teaching at the needlework convention in London. And GIMP is another material that can be used in a very textural way. And I use it for the snail's shell on my fairy's pet design. There was another thread that I was thenking. Chenille is another one that I love. I love threads with texture in them. Mm. So lampshades will always be my love. I'll always and pretty scenes with creatures are a big driving force for me at the moment. Mm.
Do you find yourself challenging yourself to extend and expand your stitching, or have you found a kind of a comfort zone and you're happy staying there?
I'm always trying to learn new stitches and incorporate them in my work. And the design that's crying out in my head now is going to have the embroidery on tulle, the net darning. So I'll investigate that. It's more driven by a need to have something in particular, you know, like I want to do wings with net embroidery on tulle. So it'll be that I'll be thinking, now I want to do the wings for this fairy. Now, how could I do them? Oh, she needs to have very fine wings that are like net. And so then that's the driving force for working out how to do embroidery on tulle. Or I'll be thinking that I want to, you know, embroider these little fairies that are not quite stump work, but they're not stitched onto the background fabric. And so it's more the other way, that my design's demanding something, and then I'll find a way to make them come alive with embroidery. Another material that I love to work with is feathers. I use peacock feathers a lot to embroider, and that they have lovely colours that change as you move. You know, on one side the peacock feather looks green, but as you move around, it turns to lovely bronze colours and so on. You know.
Now that's interesting. Yeah. Do you use the whole feather? Do you take parts of it? How do you?
Yeah, so I did look into the anatomy of a feather, and I can tell you that when you take a peacock feather, for example, and it's the same with all feathers, but peacocks are easy to explain, each individual spoke that comes out is called a barbule. And so I will cut the barbule and bend that and couch it onto the background fabric. In fact, it'd be lovely to do a whole peacock made out of peacock barbules. You know, you could embroider that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
They just
idea.
Keep coming, the ideas, you know. Yeah, I just, that's why, you know, I'm not so much anymore. But at the 3 a.m. embroidering was a big thing. Go to work tired, but full of, with my head full of embroidery ideas.
No, I can't make it to 3 o'clock. Nope.
Oh, me either. Not anymore, at least. Yeah. I used to be able to get up at 3 o'clock, but not stay up that late.
No. No.
Yeah. All right. So, it gets better as you get older.
So you're teaching at the World Needlework Convention. That's in October. Are you doing the one class,
yes,
or what are you doing?
No, it'll be three classes. I've got Song of Spring, which is a bird sitting in a morning, in the morning dew. You know, when first thing in the morning, when the sky is just starting to colour up, but it's still that sort of pale pink. And a bird is sitting there contemplating her nest, and there are flowers unfurling. And that's my Song of Spring I'm teaching first. Then I'm offering Dream a Little, which is my frog lampshade with the three frogs in the band. And, of course, Mr. Froggy and Miss Mousy, it's kind of their wedding reception, I think, because they feature there on the dance floor of Dream a Little lampshade. And then the last project I'll be teaching is The Fairy's Pet, which is the dragon and the fairies who are feeding him berries. But I first was invited by Maureen and Simon onto a cruise to New Zealand. And, you know, I had the absolute time of my life. If you had to pick five things in your life that that you loved the most, the cruise is up there. It is just so, so much fun. And I'm not a hugely gregarious person, you know, but, you know, I'd get up in the morning and find a quiet corner of the boat and have my coffee. And then I'd go and spend the day contemplating how lucky I am to be sharing my way of stitching with like-minded people, you know. And then we'd go and see a show, and then we'd get up again the next day and do the same thing. It's just, it is just so much fun. Sharing stitching with other people. So when they invited me to join them in London, I went, me, I want to come. And I'm sure it'll be as much fun. It's really nice being about around other people who have the same passion, you know, and you just sit there and stitch together. It's great fun. And Maureen and Simon are wonderful hosts.
Yeah, that's developing into quite an event, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It'll be huge, but it's the 10 days of stitching. Well, actually, no. So it's three two-day classes with other wonderful things in between. So it's actually 6 days of stitching. And, yeah, they'll have angel teachers there as well. And, yeah, it'll be really good fun. And I'm hoping I get invited to Hawaii next in 25.
Oh, that's where the next one is?
Yeah, that's the next cruise that Maureen was talking about in her chat with you.
Mm. Yes. Do you have a studio in your home? I mean, do you have a room where you work, or are you just a chair in front of the TV?
I'm so lucky, Gary. I'm so lucky. We moved up to the Adelaide Hills, which is where my partner is from, and we have a dining room that has a full glass window all along. So, yeah, as you can guess, it's not a dining room very often. Because I spread out all over the table, and I stitch from there. And we've got a little orb. It's made of metal, and it has swirls all over it. And in the bottom of it is a little tray. And so I don't do it every day, because wild birds need to be able to feed themselves. But on a stitching day, I might treat myself by filling the little dish with millet, little tiny seeds. And I love to watch the red-browed finches hopping in, and they're the only ones that can get in there. You know, the big birds can't get in through the wire swirls. And they hop in there and eat all the seed while I'm stitching. But it's got lovely natural light, and it looks out over the bushland where I live. So I'm very lucky. That's kind of my studio. Although, as I said, I have to pack it up when we have people over for dinner. But I'm very lucky to have that room where I can stitch with natural light. There's nothing beats natural light. And occasionally I'll watch TV while I'm stitching, but you can't watch anything with subtitles.
Right. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It frustrates me. Every now and then there'll be a movie I want to watch and it's all subtitles. No, I can't do that. No, can't. I got to have something I can listen to. And
that's right. And audiobooks are great for that too, aren't they? You know, you can just plug in a book and it's like having someone sitting there reading to you while you're stitching. Then all you need is someone to feed you chocolate.
That's right. That's right. Or Cheetos, you know, if that's, you know, you need something a little crunchy and salty. No touching those while you're stitching, though.
Yes. Yeah. Or chocolate-coated almonds. Then you get crunch and chocolate at the same time.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect. Perfect. And they're good for you, too, if they're dark chocolate, right?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Any chocolate will do. I'm not a big fan of white chocolate, but, yeah, you can feed me any type of chocolate. That's fine.
Okay, so we need to do a whole show just on snack items for stitchers. Okay,
that's right. Yes,
great idea. And we'll share recipes. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. My daughter is a good cook, and she's whenever I come down for a stitching session with her, she'll have some lovely treat. And I have a girlfriend who dries her own fruit, and that's nice to snack on too. Little fruit lollies, dried plum and dried apple. That's really nice as a little snack while you're stitching as well. But, yeah, that would be a good idea. Snacks for stitching.
Okay.
That's right.
So aside from cutting bridal veils, your daughter stitches too?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So she's actually a dentist, which is, you know, similar in its own way because it requires precision hands and fingers. But she does do a little bit of embroidery. And I got my son embroidering. He was watching me embroider. He goes, I want to do some embroidery. So I said to him, okay, great. What would you like to stitch? So he says, I'd like to do a motorbike.
Sure.
I said, great. Okay. So I said, draw your motorbike. So he drew his motorbike on paper, and then we transferred it to the fabric. And then I pointed him in the direction of my DMC stranded cotton, of course, quite the opposite direction to my luscious silks. And he chose his colors. And I set him up, and really, you know, really a little bit like net darning, all you need is just straight stitches and back stitches. And he did his own motorbike and he finished it. And I love it so much. I made him stitch his name. His name's Ned. So that was easy. Just little back stitches to put his name on it. And it's hanging in pride of place on my kitchen wall. So of my four children, I have two that are embroiderers. Although my son, he then said to me, he said, I want to do some more. And I said, what would you like to embroider this time? And he said, a helicopter. So I got him going on the helicopter, but he never quite finished that one. But you know, I love the idea that that children can stitch, you know, and they don't have to learn formal stitches. You know, you can stitch. All you have to do is just put the needle through the fabric, secure it, and the hard part for them is not stitching from back to front so that their thread is looped around the hoop. You know, that's the hard part. And once they master that, they can stitch motorbikes, helicopters, or ferries, whatever takes their fancy. But my daughter loves embroidery, but yeah, she's busy with her little one at the moment. But it's ended up being my enduring passion. Yep. So, and I'm very lucky.
Yeah. Well, Tisha, thanks so much for doing this with us. Boy, we learned so much, and your piece and inspirations, wow, that's very nice. And sounds like you're going to have a great time in London at the convention, so good for you.
Oh, it'll be so much fun. And it was lovely talking to you, Gary and Beth. It's always easy to talk to people, you know, who share the passion. So thank you so much for your wonderful fiber talk. It's great to have talked to you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to everyone for listening.